feeling like baseball season around here. It's warm. It's sunny.
We're both miserable.
We're both miserable. We both hate the Rockies offense. It is baseball season. Woo! Yeah. All right.
Catch the fever indeed.
Catch the fever. Unfortunately, it is scarlet fever.
It is typhoid fever.
Hi. Welcome inside this week's episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I'm Tyler Mon.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
And we're talking Colorado Rockies baseball episode number 160.
Good
We're nearly a full major league season schedule, 162 of podcasts.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Hey, it's a pleasure to have you with us. Thanks for tuning in wherever you found us. You can give us a rating and a review and a subscription and such.
Only if they're good ratings.
Yeah.
I don't want this ridiculous, like, one star, like, no. Not enough porn content.
Ridiculous.
You know?
Ridiculous. Don't be absurd.
That's not what we're here for.
Yeah, exactly. Jerks.
That's a Purple Dinosaur podcast.
Purple Dinosaur Porncast. Porn Pull Dinosaur Podcast. What? But you can find us and give us a good rating and a review. And get in touch with the show, purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com. It's an email address we never check. So with that, hello. You're my and our Colorado Rockies. 3-4 through a 7-game road trip through Miami and Tampa. And we will never speak of the state of Florida again.
Not that we're going to have to. Yeah, I can't think of a single reason why we would ever think about the state of Florida, especially not in the next like 18 months or so.
Except for when, like, undoubtedly there's like a federal lawsuit filed against, well, I would say federal, but it's not like the government looks at anything that rich people do anymore as being criminal. But against the Marlins is having like duped the city into paying $3 billion for that ballpark or something.
Move them to Nashville.
Yeah, you know, they're going to Portland. Something. So there has been much hand-wringing and gnashing of teeth over the last week as the Colorado Rockies opened play a week ago today. They have scored like one run in the last 99 innings.
Seems like it.
They scored 12 runs their first two games of the season, and they have scored 3 runs since. Is that right?
They've scored 5 runs since.
Okay.
3 runs in the game 3.
Oh, that's right.
They lost 7-3 to Miami, and then they scored 2 runs in the next 4 games.
Yeah, yeah. So 15 in the first 3 games, and 3 runs since.
I'm going to lower my glasses and say something really condescendingly. This team is 2-0 when Daniel Murphy's in the lineup, averaging 6 runs per game, and they are 1-4, averaging 1 run per game when he's been on the IL.
Oh, boy. That is really something. It's really something you want to hear about this team.
Oh, yeah.
It's really great.
They struck out a lot in that time, too, which is also fun. They struck out at least 12 times in 4 of those 5 games.
Awesome.
Since they won their first 2.
The Los Angeles Dodgers have 18 home runs this season. Colorado Rockies have 17 runs this season.
Rockies have 2 home runs. And you know who we get coming into Coors Field this weekend? It's the Dodgers.
Oh,
how
right.
Crazy.
The Los Angeles Dodgers.
Yeah, that'll be fun, I'm sure. And there's an ESPN, a Sunday Night Baseball game locked in there.
Bad.
I'm sure that'll be fine. And who's starting? Chad Bettis is starting that game? Oh, perfect. Yeah, we're going to be fine.
Great.
Yeah.
Harrison, John Gray, and Chad Bettis, the 3 the Rockies come home with.
I wish they would just, like, Freeland's on normal rest. Just, like, push him. Like, put him on Sunday, please. Do it for Espen. I don't care. Do it for Espen. Put Freeland there, please.
The Dodgers have scored 55 runs so far. There is one team in baseball that has scored more than that. That's the Seattle Mariners, who have scored 56 somehow.
Played the more next games.
Highest
played 2 more games.
In the Los Angeles Dodgers, or in the National League behind the Los Angeles Dodgers, Philadelphia Phillies have scored 39 runs. Dodgers have scored 55. They are 5-2. Despite a run differential of plus 21, but their run differential.
And, pretty much what they were doing last year, let's be honest.
Although they sucked out of the gate last year.
They
started 9-19, and the Dodgers were not over 500 for good until like late May.
Good. So then they'll start a hot now and then suck the rest of the year. It's fine.
Yeah, it'd be fine. Okay. But let's there's so much to discuss. And most notably, I guess, the point that you should all take away from the last week is I'm going to read a quote to you from @RealJoshRedick on Twitter. Quote, "We are 7 games into the season," in all caps, "chill."
Yeah, I think that's about accurate. Yeah,
I think it's pretty good. Houston Astros are 2-5. They played a trash road trip through a couple of stops. One of them, by the way, in Tampa. They started the season not great against the Tampa Bay Rays. The Tampa Bay Rays look like world beaters with that pitching staff as of right now. They are 5-2 and pacing the American League East. The Astros were blanked yesterday against the Texas Rangers 4-0. But I think the sentiment stands. Like, it's been a week.
Right. And you look at every team
that's a tenth of the season.
Right. Like, every team that was prognosticated to go and win their division, especially in the American League, have all gone out to terrible starts.
All bad.
The Yankees are 2-4. Red Sox are 2-5. Indians are 2-3. Astros are 2-5. Like, guys, like, it's okay. Like,
it's a week.
It's a week.
And granted, and I made this point the other day on the tweets, I think that the reason why we're all so frustrated right out of the gate is the last couple of years have shown us that it's really fun to watch a good baseball team. And to me, the offseason actually felt, at least in the context of the Rockies, the offense felt the offseason felt short, because it was like, you were so geared up. They made it to the playoffs, and then you're just so excited to watch them again. And once they get back out there, it's like, hell yeah, that little break is over with. Let's watch that team again. And you get accustomed to, like, this excitement of the second half of last season, then they start off a little slow, and it's like, oh, come on. But, like, it's been a week. As I tweeted out from the account the other day, this has been less than one half, and we always have to do this every year. We always have to break it down.
We always get a new wave of people who are just coming along for the first time and got to break it down for some people.
Right,
yeah.
Right. There is always a an explanation that we give, which is, this has not even been the equivalent of one half of the first game of the season on an NFL schedule. A tenth of the season in Major League Baseball, or a 16th of the season in Major League Baseball, is 10 games. So I guess we're just over the halfway point of the first game of the season, basically. But you're a week into the season. It's pretty much like you've played a half or less than a half is kind of what it feels like at the beginning of the year. Like, if the Broncos were down one possession at halftime in the first game of the season,
throwing a parade,
I don't think people are like, oh, season's over. But, like, we got a lot of that.
Oh, if it's at home, it's September Broncos. They're going to win every time.
Right, exactly. Well, and like I said, like, it's not like a current Broncos team. Like, imagine a good Broncos team, and you'd be first half, the first
good
game,
Broncos
whatever, they'll
team.
Be fine. But, yeah, we do get we get this following every year that starts the season with us, and then by, you know, whenever the NFL draft is, they kind of slink back into their usual interests, which is fine.
Whatever.
We welcome you at the beginning of the season. That's fine. Yeah, it's, you know, have things been good? No. But, they're 7 games in. I'm not gonna be too worried about this as of yet.
For me, the most frustrating part was that the season kind of started, especially when they were struggling in Tampa, the exact same way that the season ended. So the last viewpoint you had of the 2018 Colorado Rockies was them totally overmatched by a team with a bunch of relievers throwing ungodly stuff out of the bullpen and looking like they were totally guessing to a man up at the plate for 3 straight games and getting no offense whatsoever.
A lot of teams look like that against the Brewers, and a lot of teams look like that against the Rays.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's the problem that I had with it. Not a problem, I guess, but that's just what I felt, because that was the last taste you had in your mouth of the 2018 Colorado Rockies, was that. And then you start the first road trip week of the next season, and it's almost the exact same thing over and over again with the Rays.
Yeah.
The Rays are almost they're the equivalent of the AL's Brewers, because they have a couple of starters that are okay, obviously one that's really good. And then they have a bunch of dudes who are just hucking like 99 mile an hour fastballs with like 12-inch break on it, and you're like, what in the hell is this demonry?
Yeah.
Like that Jose Alvarado pitch that kind of went that viral dude, yesterday.
Holy like, cow. There were like three of them that went viral yesterday.
Yeah, a lefty throwing 99 with a pitch that broke literally a foot into Charlie Blackmon's hands. If he would have hit it, it would have broken his hand. It would have shattered his fingers.
And that's not even the one I was thinking of. I was thinking of the one against Mark Reynolds where Mark Reynolds started jumping out of the batter's box and the pitch finished over the outer third of the plate and it was 99.
The Rays are gonna put a lot of teams in offensive slumps this year because they've got the Cy Young winner, they got Charlie Morton, who's also very good, and then they've got like Alvarado and Ryan Stanek and Diego Castillo and all
even
these
Chaz
dudes.
Rowe, like Chaz Rowe stuff like, is filthy.
Yeah, like former it was an 0-2 pitch that he hung, you know, like that Iannetta hit out yesterday. Like they're gonna put a lot of teams in the slumps. Like they're gonna compete because of that pitching staff, and they're gonna make a lot of really good hitters look stupid, like they did for the Rockies for three games.
Yeah. So I don't think there's any shame in having struggled against the Rays. That's a team that, you know, in any other division, that is a division championship caliber team. And who knows? Maybe they shock everybody in that division.
That team won 90 games last year and got better in the offseason. So, you know.
Maybe there's a surprise coming this year in that division. Yeah. That'd be kind of cool. Well, it'd be cool for those of us who are baseball fans. It wouldn't be cool for baseball, seeing as how, you know, they'd have to, like, give tickets away to youth organizations and church groups in order to fill that ballpark during the
playoffs. Fox has the American League playoffs this year. Like, we don't want the Rays. Let's just say
no
that.
No one cares what you want, large network. You're really struggling, you people, these huge corporations.
Hey, man, that merger just went through. It's you know, $70 billion doesn't go as far as it used to, you know.
So, like, I'm not really super worried about struggling against the Tampa Bay Rays. I'm also not really that worried about the guys they struggled against with the Marlins. You know, I mean, would you have liked things to have gone better against the Marlins? Yes. But, like, Sandy Alcantara's really good.
Yeah, I mean, he had a real high upside. If he ever put it together and got his control under control, no pun intended, I guess, he was going to be really good. Like, he was the centerpiece of that Marcelo Zuna deal. And, I mean, I don't even think he threw a ball that was more than, like, 6 inches off the plate in that game against the Rockies. He was absolutely lights out.
Yeah. So, you know, he's really good. They're going to struggle against good pitchers. The thing that is worrisome right now is the Daniel Murphy absence. And it's because, you know, the offense did get better with the signing of Daniel Murphy.
And through it.
Which, you know, whatever. But what the injury does is not only does it remove a productive bat, but it also everything, the way the lineup is structured changes drastically when you don't have him in there. Which, you know, I don't know. He's Daniel Murphy. He's not Babe Ruth, but there's a lot that falls around him.
Right. It's a problem, too, because it does shift everybody else up from maybe bench roles to starting roles. And we've professed our love for Garrett Hampson on this podcast more than enough times.
Yeah.
Garrett Hampson had a very, very rough trip. He went 1-for-17 with 7 strikeouts.
Yeah.
And if you know Garrett Hampson, that is unlike anything he's ever done on a baseball field probably in his entire life. I'm sure that's probably the worst stretch he has ever had in his entire existence playing baseball. Like he will be better than that, trust me. Raimel Tapia went 1-for-11 with 4 strikeouts. That was not good. Pretty much everybody besides like David Dahl had a terrible trip for the most part.
Yeah, pretty much. And not to go all, you just know these guys are going to hit. But
you know they're gonna hit.
No, I mean I just don't think, you know, they're not gonna continue struggling like this. The thing that I think people have to keep in mind is you've still got anywhere from 2 to 3 guys on an everyday basis who are getting really their first regular major league at bats in Ryan McMahon, Garrett Hampson, and Raimel Tapia when he's in there.
Right.
So like those guys, there's gonna be a learning curve for that. And I would much rather have that learning curve be in April than have it be in August. So I'm not really worried about where they are right now. Would I have loved them to have gone out and gone 4-3 or 5-2? Absolutely. But the Rays are a very good team. I think going in there, you kind of figured that that's going to be a series loss. Would have loved for them to grab 3 out of 4 in Miami, but you split a 4-game series on the road. That's kind of the goal. So they come home with 3-4. Like it's not a sky is falling type of start to the season.
The best part is that the best position on the field in terms of hitting right now is the Rockies catchers.
Yeah, what?
Both Rockies catchers had pretty good offensive weeks. Ionetta had the big home run yesterday, the game winner.
And he has hit everything hard.
He's OPSing over 1,000 right now. Tony Wolters went 3-for-9 on the trip with a couple of doubles and a run batted in. The only three guys that rated above average right now on OPS Plus are the two catchers and David Dahl, and that's it on the team right now. Wow. Yeah. It's not what you want.
It'll be interesting. They get home tomorrow. We're recording this, of course, on Thursday. They will take on the Los Angeles Dodgers, and the Dodgers are 5-2 to start the season. They have crushed a whole lot of pitching to begin the year, although to be fair, they've done that against the D-backs and the Giants, who are, what's the word, bad. The D-backs look awful, man. With the exception of their pitchers, who are just crushing the ball.
Yeah, they've been weird so far. Like their offense showed up, but also in their San pitching Diego. Staff looked terrible.
Yeah,
they got blown out by the Dodgers in most of those games. Besides that 13 inning game.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then like Zach Greinke's up there throwing 80 poo.
Yeah.
But also dropping bombs.
Yeah, he's hitting dingers, which is one way to compensate for it. It's been a weird season.
Like Robbie Ray's leading the league in walks. Zach Godley got blown up. Yeah. I mean, they're going to be a very weird team because their offense is, shown it can hit a little bit right now, but I don't think they're going to be worth much this year. Yeah,
I think you're right.
Sorry to my wife listening.
Just a reminder that MLB Network's out of the park projections picked them to finish second in the division. So the start to this year, that's the tough thing, and we've had this conversation year after year on the podcast as well, is like you wait through a long off season and you're just so starved for baseball, and when it gets here you just want to be able to yell about sports a little bit. And that's fine. That's fun. That's what sports are for. Sports are fun. Getting fired up about sports and yelling and being a crazy person, that's the whole point of being a sports fan. But you can't really take away that much from 1 week of games, especially when it's the first week of games.
No.
If this type of stretch happens in September, then the sky is falling. Then it feels really bad, and it's coming at a terrible time and all that. But right now, it's if you're getting a rough offensive stretch out of the way right now, and then you go through the rest of the month of April where they don't have an easy schedule, and you start heating up, because you just know they're going to hit.
Yeah. The positives you can take, too, are that Germán Márquez looks like an ace, and we'll get to his supposed extension in a little bit. Kyle Freeland, I know he struggled a little bit in that first inning. It was also due to an error on Chris Iannetta yesterday or 2 days ago now, I guess. He ended up striking out a career high 10 in 4 2/3, though he had to throw like 35 pitches in the first inning. He's looked good in his first two starts. That, the overall numbers against Tampa didn't look great, but you look deeper into it, he's fine. John Gray looked pretty good, which is a good sign. 10 strikeouts and 6 2/3.
Unless
he got
read
no
Twitter.
Run support. Yeah.
The dumbest people on earth. Some dude, just like reading the Rockies replies, some guy was like,
that's always smart.
So many people who were like, John Gray shit the bed again. John Gray went 6 2/3, struck out 10, gave up 3 runs, and they got nothing to support him. Like, how any logical, rational observer can watch that game and say it was John Gray's fault? You're an idiot.
Yes.
Shut up. You're an idiot.
Yeah, I'd be more worried about Tyler Anderson a little bit. Chad Bettis, I think you kind of know that he probably shouldn't be a guy that faces a lineup more than twice in a game, and that's what really did him in against Tampa. Anderson did not look great. He didn't walk anybody, but gave up 5 runs on 9 hits in 5 innings against Miami. We've seen him go through stretches where he hasn't looked great, and he's bounced back and looked really good. So got to give him time. He's been fine, but you want him to be a little bit better. But 3/5 of your rotation through the first time around looked pretty damn good. I think you take that right out of the gate.
Yeah, I'm with you. The Tyler Anderson thing, and we've talked about this before. The difference between John Gray struggles and Tyler Anderson struggles, John Gray has stuff. John Gray, if he's struggling to find command or whatever it is, he can still reach back, get upper 90s, He's got filthy breaking stuff, you know, even with the way it moves, if he's not commanding it, he's got all that. Tyler yes. Anderson, if Tyler Anderson is missing his spots, then he's throwing 91-mile-an-hour fastballs over the heart of the plate.
What's wrong with Laika? What's wrong? I can hear Laika in the background. What's wrong with Laika?
She's just wandering around whining at me because it's so nice outside and we haven't spent as much time outside today as she would like.
Oh, it's okay, Laika.
So I'm finally going to have a patio put in at my place, and I think she's irritated because, like, whenever the weather gets nice or got nice, we lived over near Westwash Park for the last, like, 3 years, ever since I got her, and I wake up every morning and we go outside and she'd lay on the patio and I'd have my coffee and she'd sun herself, and it's, like, amazing outside right now, but my backyard's been all torn up because I had some landscaping work done. They're working on some drainage things, and I haven't had this patio put in yet. There was no patio here when we moved here.
Right.
And so, like, we go outside, but she's not, like, all about just, like, wandering around in, you know, a torn-up yard. And so then she wants to come back in, and then she just whines at me when we're inside. I'm like, you can't have this both ways, pal. If you want to go outside, we can go outside, but you're going to have to realize, like, it's not the perfect yard yet. These high-maintenance five-year-olds.
We think Zoe just turned two the other day because we got like an email from the vet that was like, did someone have a birthday just now? And we're like,
did she tell you that?
Like, we adopted her in September, but like, we don't know if she just had a birthday. Like, do you know if she just had a birthday? Like, so
they did carbon date. They counted the rings on her.
Right. Exactly. So, she might be two. I don't know.
Happy birthday, Zoe.
Yeah, she's been much more obedient lately, which is very nice. Like, she hated the crate for so long, and then I just gotta go, hey, time for the crate. And she, like, will begrudgingly walk in while giving me the stink eye, but she's like, all right, fine, I'll go in this time. Like,
that's fun.
But no, she's at day camp today, so she's running around with her friends, so she's fun.
Okay, that's good. It's always a good thing.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, the Rockies.
Dogs. Dogs, man. Yeah, so anyway, the Rockies. I don't even know what we were talking about. What were we talking about?
Who cares?
That I was trying to get Laika to stop warning.
Tyler Anderson needs to be more perfect than
Denver. Right. Tyler Anderson just doesn't have, when he's off, it's gonna be a bad time.
If he's trying to French fry, he's gonna have a bad time.
Yeah. More so than when somebody like John Gray is off. And that's, I think, something to keep an eye on. If Tyler Anderson continues to struggle, or if Chad Bettis continues to struggle, when Antonio Senzatella gets healthy, if Peter Lambert starts well at AAA, keep an eye on those guys, because at some point you would think a move would be made. I mean, obviously it's way too early to be, you know, proclaiming the end of anybody's careers, but I think, like, Chad Bettis can be an effective relief guy.
Change of pace guy, yeah.
If the Rockies were going to do anything unorthodox the way the Rays do and start with an opener or something like that, Chad Bettis would be the guy to do it with.
It's what they did with Ryan Stanek to Ryan Yarborough.
Yeah.
Ryan Stanek to Ryan Yarborough.
Right.
That's not annoying at all. Because Stanek can throw his, like, 99 with, like, a 140-mile-an-hour split finger pitch. And then Ryan Yarborough, like, barely cracks, like, 92 from the left side. And Stanek's a righty. And listen, I know that they make it sound like, oh, we want to give different looks. Like, well, like, okay, like, four guys saw Ryan Stanek. Like, what's the, you know, but whatever. Yeah. That's how they do it. It seems to have worked for them. Yarborough was very effective last year. Stanek's obviously really good because he is really good. But, yeah, throw someone like, I don't know, like, Harrison Musgrave or something like that, or, you know, DJ Johnson or something in the first inning, and then Chad Bettis piggybacking off it, that's a little different, sure.
Yeah.
Or Estevez or something like that. Yeah.
It kind of surprises me that no team has yet, and maybe we're getting there to this point, but that no team has just yet decided, like, nah, we're going to go with, you know, three different guys for the first three times through a lineup. And because when you look at the numbers, the OPS of lineups improves dramatically the more times you see a pitcher, as you would expect.
So you're saying you get like one pitcher for the first time through the lineup and then take him out immediately when the lead up. Okay.
Yeah. And then go with another guy. And I'm sure that's coming. Yeah. And you'd keep an OPS of an opposing lineup around like 500-600.
That seems like a very Dodgers thing to do.
Yeah, probably. Especially like when undoubtedly injuries ravage that team at some point during the season and they go on a 30-game winning streak, because that's the way the Dodgers operate. I don't know. I think we're probably getting there at some point in Major League Baseball. The Rockies will never be that team. which, you know, for traditionalists, that's fine. They may have to think a little bit outside the box if those guys continue to struggle. I don't know. We'll see. So they are 3-4. They come home to take on the Dodgers this weekend. But the schedule is not easy, and we have talked about that. I think if you get onto a roll at home, and granted, I guess, you know, they're coming back home and you take on the Dodgers, and you know the Dodgers are going to be a little bit scary. The Braves, the way the Braves have started this season, I don't think they're really quite as frightening as maybe what you would have thought right out of the gate. The Braves will be here Monday through Wednesday.
But they got a lot of talent on that team.
They do have a lot of talent.
That lineup is very good. Their pitching staff
is
not
sure. Shaky.
Not sure yet.
Which is surprising because the Braves, for the last 5 years, they've led our pitching rankings as far as their farm system goes at MILB.com for like 3 straight years because they have just had such a glut of arms. And somehow those guys have not turned themselves into like a frontline staff, which seems very strange.
Right. I mean, they walked the ballpark last year. I mean, they led the league in walks last year, and we're still a playoff team.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they don't have Mike Fultonevich yet, but you know, we'll see.
Yeah. So they come in Monday through Wednesday. But, you know, tomorrow is it's going to be interesting. Tyler Anderson goes to the mound against the Los Angeles Dodgers. The one thing that I love is the way Rockies players get geared up for opening day at Coors Field. Chris Iannetta in his postgame interview yesterday on KOA said, you know, it's a holiday in Denver. We love that. We love the energy in the ballpark on opening day. I think that's pretty cool that that's turned into like a thing that they've embraced now rather than the old cliche of like, well, these people all show up to drink and then they'll only come to the party deck the rest of the year, blah, blah, blah. Like, I think it's kind of cool the Rockies players now are like, no, this is awesome, man. Like, everybody gets drunk and crazy.
Yeah,
and
but even fantastic. If they are just doing that, who cares?
The stands
are packed. Like,
yeah,
cares?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Tyler Anderson tomorrow takes on Kenta Maeda, who traditionally not great at, well, I guess overall he's been decent at Coors Field, but I think last year really struggled at Coors Field, if I remember right. In his career, actually, he's got a 3.19 ERA in his career at Coors Field.
Wow, liar. How about you keep lying?
Better than what I thought. But yeah, last year, I'm pretty sure he struggled.
Sure, yeah, I bet he did, you liar.
Let's go look at the old stats portal with the blinding red lettering now that the private portal has been deprecated and will not be updated in 2019.
Which also, like, what a word to use there. Deprecated? Yeah, like, deprecated. Is that even the correct word?
Kenta Maeda, road call.
Call.
3 runs on 6 hits over 5 1/3 on August 10th.
Wow, what a piece of shit. You're right.
Only 2/3. Oh, yeah, because then he moved to the bullpen. Maybe it was 2 years ago. Maybe I just made it all up.
Yeah.
Maybe nothing.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. Maybe it's,
no, this
it's
is
all
fun.
Wishful.
This is fun. This is why we have production meetings. Yeah.
production meetings for a free podcast. Get out of here. Y'all want to contribute to our GoFundMe. Maybe we'll dedicate some time to making this show good. We don't have a GoFundMe. But, you know, it's you win 2 out of 3 and you exit the weekend at 500. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. I mean, okay. Let's do it. Like, let's win on Sunday, though. Please, like,
that'd be nice. Like, win Friday, win Sunday.
Yeah, because you got Buehler on Saturday, who didn't look good in his first start, but he's obviously still got really good stuff, and you know, shoved it up the Rockies pooper last year.
production meetings again.
Yeah, production meetings. He's really good. Just win Sunday, please. That's all I want. Like, and score some runs. So keep the Coors narrative going for a long time. Like, that'd be great.
Who do they go against on Sunday?
I believe it is Urias.
Ah. The teenager at the teenager 7 on Twitter, and he is now 21.
I was going to say, like,
I always wondered, like, what is he going to do when he hits 20? And he just never changed it.
I don't know, man. But Blink-182 keeps making songs about being in high school, and they're like 40.
So does Taylor Swift.
Yeah,
I would assume that's
probably
just what I attached to her from the start of her
career. You're going to be really you're going to make some people mad on Twitter.
She was 25 and she was singing about being in high school. So. Yeah, the Colorado Rockies are fine. I think that's kind of the point of all of this.
Right, and whatever. And we can shift now to Herman Marquez.
Yeah, let's talk about
that. Because Herman Marquez recently just signed reportedly. I assume they're going to wait until either today or tomorrow to do it because they want to wait till after he pitched. And then when they got back to Denver, yada, yada, yada. But Jeff Passan had reported that Germán Márquez signed a deal, a 5-year, what, $43 million extension for the Rockies to keep Germán Márquez, our beautiful German little boy, here for a long time, which is very nice. Now, we had this discussion over text the last couple of days where, because we had been, this is the right after the Ronald Acuña Jr. extension was signed, 8 years, $100 million for a guy who's 21, basically getting paid a pittance of what he would get if he were put himself on the open market right now. And we were saying that the rash of extensions going on right now around Major League Baseball, it is such a huge boon for the owners and for not really nobody else, but the owners are getting the big last lap, especially the Acuña deal. The Braves, who are historically a penny-pinching team over the last, you know, 10, 15 years, they are got to be dancing up in those suites of that new ballpark that was built for absolutely no reason, 45 miles from Atlanta.
That nobody got a public hearing or vote on.
Yeah. And also, like, have you seen where that ballpark is in relation to downtown Atlanta? It is it's like 45 miles. It's like DIA compared to where downtown Denver.
It really is. That's not an exaggeration. And with Atlanta traffic, it's even worse. We had a DU lacrosse road trip to the Atlanta area 3 years ago now when they were just starting construction on that. And I had no idea where it was. And I was just like out driving looking for food one night, and I drove by like all these construction cranes, and I was like, I wonder what that is over there, because there were so many cranes. And I drove by and it was like future home of the Atlanta Braves, and I was like, this is where you're building this? It's like in the middle of like a corporate office park. It's very difficult to get to via public transportation. That place sucks.
It looks
exactly like Turner Field.
Right.
Like, you couldn't have imagined something a little bit different by.
And so that's why we were. And of course, the owners are just loving all these extensions because basically it makes their job a lot easier, because ownership seems to have shifted from the last really like year, I guess, from paying for past performance to paying for future performance. And
which is not a bad idea. It's not a bad thing. It's not a bad concept. It's a very difficult growing pain right now in baseball. But ownership has also gone from let's pay for past performance to let's pay for future performance with no middle step.
So
if you were a guy who just hit 30, if you're Craig Kimbrel and your career has been dominant and you are unemployed, how is that fair?
No, it doesn't make any sense either.
No. I mean, and not only that, but like Craig Kimbrel could really help somebody. Right now, Dallas Keuchel could really help somebody right now. I mean, Dallas Keuchel was not great last year, but Dallas Keuchel's a Cy Young winner in his career. I mean,
Craig Kimbrel could have been one of the
best relievers in baseball throughout his career.
Just won a World Series.
Saved
42 games last year. Like, he's still very, very good. And a lot of bullpens so far this season have been very. But the big thing for me, we got some pushback on Twitter when we were going about, like, you know, kind of ripping the ownership of the Braves for signing these deals. You know, the MLBPA really has not done much to kind of curb this at all. And we got some pushback on this. And I understand where people are coming from, where, you know, you're giving a 21-year-old kid with less than 150 games of MLB service time $100 million. Like, how can that be bad? Inherently, it's not. Because, you know, a guy like Acuña is now set for life. He's still going to be a free agent by the time he's 29, yada, yada, yada. That's fine.
Although, as we've seen, that right now is like a death sentence.
Right. Becoming a free agent now. Now, who knows what it's going to look like in 8 years? Obviously, it can be very different. But the thing with it is that ownership has more money now than they've ever had in the entire existence of Major League Baseball. The $10 billion revenue last year, and a lot of teams have pocketed that money and are not handing it out to the players that have earned it or should be earning it. That is the biggest problem that we have with these extensions. And now to Germán Márquez, you feel great for Germán Márquez because he signed out of Venezuela for however much money he did, and then how many years later, 5 years later or whatever, he's now made nearly $50 million in his career because of this deal. That's awesome. Great for Germán Márquez. You feel good for him. He didn't have to sign it. He wanted to sign it. Obviously, this is what people are doing now. But a guy like Germán Márquez, should he have hit the market, should have, you know, in based on past contracts, should have been getting a 15, 20 million per year. Yeah. So a guy with his stuff would be getting like a 5 for 100, let's just say, you know, like that's what he would be getting on the market right now if he were go on the market right this second with how contracts were given out over the last 5 years. That's not how it is anymore.
Yeah.
So the issue is these owners are flush with cash and they're keeping it. And then it almost seems like it's weird because it's a weird like mix of bad faith politics and not, because is it bad faith they're locking up some really great young talent they have in their system that has performed well at the big league level for, you know, even for it's not a long amount of time? You see the, you know, the future chart of where they're going to go and you say, you know what, I'll pay for that. Or is it bad politics because they're doing it in order to save money down the road and save like millions and millions of dollars down the road? It is like, I understand why people have an issue with this, with people, you know, clapping back on this. I really do.
Yeah. I do too. I think especially when you are a normal human being, you see somebody sign a contract for 40 some million dollars and it's like, oh, what is everybody bitching about? But like we have discussed, I feel like I've said 100 times a day, like we've discussed before on the show, the money is already there. Whether you think baseball players and professional athletes are absurdly overpaid or not, which they are, the money is there. The money's not going anywhere. So your opinion on these guys shouldn't be making this money anyway, it's not like the money's just going to magically disappear and we're going to go back to the economic model of baseball in the 1960s.
Right.
The money's there. TV, that revenue is going to be generating billions upon billions upon billions of dollars. And if the players don't get it, if the 700 or however many players there are in Major League Baseball do not get it, that means 30 owners split that money.
Yeah.
And you want those billionaires to take all that money? That's like, I have never understood about this argument.
And you can't think of baseball like you think of like your corporate office job. You have to. It's like a suspension of disbelief when it comes to money and how much money is being thrown around. Or it's like when you're at the airport and like all of a sudden chips cost $7.50 and you're like, okay, like I'm at an airport, you know, a beer's $14. Like that's great. Fine. Like because you have to realize you're at an airport and that's what they charge. And that's just like you have to accept that first and then you can get on with your life.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that's it. Like that's, you know, the people side with the billionaires so much more than they sign with the players,
it's
which
so
I don't understand. It is so weird.
So weird. And it doesn't make sense because the owners do nothing in this game. Like if you're an owner, you hire a general manager.
The general manager makes
the personnel decisions. Yeah. You sign the checks. Largely with money that you're getting from revenue sharing. It's not like you're out there, you know, hucking parking lots and selling concessions to pay salaries, unlike some of the takes after Mike Trout signed his extension. Like, if you are an owner or an ownership group, should you get some money for owning a team? Yeah, obviously. Should you get over half of the revenue generated by the players? No.
Well, and
that's outlandish.
And did you hear the story about how at the owners' meetings, like they were giving out like a championship belt to the team who paid the least in arbitration, who saved the most money? They gave out like a championship like wrestling belt.
Yeah, this is a story by Mark Carrig in The Athletic, and it is not a good look.
It is infuriating is what it is. Yeah.
I mean, it is, to be fair, the most American thing ever.
Oh, absolutely.
That the owners would claim all of the revenue that their employees generate for them and then cry foul when the employees ask for more. And the fact that average Joes, for some reason, are siding with ownership. Like, that is the thing that's maybe the most American thing ever. But I just don't like when you look at it from a logical context. How much do you think – does Artie Moreno bring people to the ballpark in Anaheim or does Mike Trout?
Right.
Like, I don't think people are showing up to be like, oh, man, I hope I get a glimpse of the owner's box. Maybe I'll get his rookie card. Maybe Artie Moreno will sign this for me. Like, nobody cares about these people. The only reason anybody cares about owners in professional sports is to complain about them. You know, like, the only reason anybody has ever cared about the Monfort family in Denver is to bitch about them.
Great. And we've mentioned a lot of times since he hired Jeff Breidich, how often have you heard Dick Monfort, Charlie Monfort in the media?
Not much.
Hardly ever. Just to announce signings. That's pretty much it.
And like every once in a while when somebody will, I saw a tweet the other day about the Broncos ownership situation, and the guy was like, I would even take the Montforts over this at this point.
Whoa.
You mean the ownership group that's made the playoffs two years in a row? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. I just like the issue with the extensions right now is, and Hayden Ringer, our good buddy from the Utah base of Rocky's Twitter, Hayden put it this way, and actually I should really find this tweet because the way he worded it was a lot smarter than what I'm going to be able to actually say. So let's tap dance while
it seems to happen a lot because Hayden's a pretty smart dude, it sounds like.
Yeah, he is. It's so strange how the group of Rocky's Twitter in Utah, they're all so good.
But not the bizarro Rockies Utah Twitter.
We found that. Which is fitting.
There is a sect of bizarro Rockies Twitter that is the exact opposite.
There's
of
a
Rockies
normie
Twitter
Rockies
you know
Twitter
Mark.
Out there, which is so weird that we have all existed. This is the sixth season of this podcast, and Rockies Twitter, at least in our iteration of it, really all came together that first year in 2014, and we had no idea that any of this existed until the tournament this year.
No.
And now it's like, now we can't ignore the fact that those people are out there. Here's Hayden's tweet. Quote, with every extension, the market tilts in favor of the owners more and more, incentivizing players to jump at any amount of money while it's still on the table. That hits it on the head. If you're a player right now, you have been so frightened into, God, what if I hit free agency and nobody wants me? I don't want to turn into Craig Kimbrell. That's what it is.
Even Nolan said something along those lines. Of course, he wanted to be in Denver. He wanted to stay in Denver. They offered him $260 million. Obviously, that's a lot of reasons why he stayed too. But he saw what was going on with Manny Machado and Bryce Harper. And he's, you know, Mike Trout did the same thing. He said, you know what? I don't like how free agency is going right now. I see the writing on the wall with free agency. I don't want to have to deal with that all offseason. I want to be able to get into camp, get with my teammates, you know, be ready to go when camp starts. And that's not going to be happening anytime soon. So I really like the fact that, you know, guys are, or not like that, maybe I kind of see what guys are thinking of right now. They really do see what's going on in free agency, and some guys just don't want that. I think Bryce Harper wanted that initially, and then he realized it sucked. I think now that's why he got the 13-year deal with a no trade clause, you know?
Yeah.
So, and no opt-outs. Guys don't like that. It takes a rare breed, like a Trevor Bauer, to actually like free agency and doing that all the time, so.
Yeah,
because he's normal. Yeah.
Like mental problems. So I feel like this is a conversation that we're probably going to have a lot as the season goes along and these seasons go along. I feel like they don't come to town for 2 weeks, but I feel like we need to discuss Bryce Harper and the Philadelphia Phillies.
Okay.
The Phillies have started the season, obviously, very hot. They are 4-1 so far this year. They have a plus 17 run differential. That is the second best mark in the National League behind the Dodgers. I have so many thoughts about this team. As we discussed last week, and I have made known on this show before, I am not a Gabe Kapler guy. I think that marriage is a bad one, and I don't know how much longer it's going to last.
We've talked on the show before. Yes.
As we have said before, I don't expect that great things are going to happen while Gabe Kapler is the pilot of that team. Last year, there was a situation in which Carlos Santana had to go into the clubhouse and break a television with a bat because players were in the clubhouse during the game playing Fortnite. And that was in like September. Like if you're a manager and that is happening on your team in September, I don't know where this is headed. But this Bryce Harper Philadelphia marriage, and it's the second time that I've used marriage, and there's a joke that I can make here that I'm not going to. But Bryce Harper, he waited until the first week of spring training to sign with the Phillies, which suggested to me and I think a lot of other people that he was trying to find anything he could to not sign with the Phillies. He signs with the Phillies, and now, does it not feel so forced?
Yeah.
Like this love of this immediate love affair between Phillies fans and Bryce Harper.
Like, I'm sure
if Bryce Harper wanted to be in Philly that badly, he would have signed in December.
Like, and I'm sure like the, you know, the 7 years or whatever he was with the Nationals, I'm sure he just loved going to Philly all the time.
I'm sure Philly was just a top destination.
Yeah.
But it's just like, okay, the bat flip I had no problem with. I love bat flips. You go back and play your former team and people are booing you and you want to flip your bat to the sky, man. I don't care about that. The thing that has annoyed me so badly is this bow that he does to fans in right
field. It's so weird. Yeah.
The bow and then like this double fist pump thing. Like he looks like a robot. There's a component in his brain saying like show emotion, be excited, and he's like trying to approximate what a human reaction would be to being excited to be in front of those people.
No, he's like he's appropriated being a Philly, like a native Philadelphia.
Yeah, like he just
it's like
he just
it's like cultural appropriation.
Right,
he's like wearing like Fanatic shoes and like a gritty T-shirt, and then
he came
like
up to the Fresh Prince theme for
which is a song about how Philadelphia
it's about
is
leaving
awful
Philadelphia.
And
exactly.
sends Will across the country. Like yeah, the, well, wait till the next till tomorrow when he comes up to Streets of Philadelphia by Bruce Springsteen because it just has Philadelphia in the title. Like
I think it was our good buddy Jesse Spector who got mad at us on Twitter yesterday, and I have to address that. But I think it was Jesse who tweeted something like, wow, what a way for Bryce Harper to indicate that he really actually wanted to go to Los Angeles.
Yeah, right? Like,
because that's a song about leaving Philadelphia due to gang violence. Come on. And Phillies fans freaked out about it. Like, what?
Hey, that's
song, people. That show didn't even take place in Philadelphia.
That song's got our city name in the title.
What if he came up to the It's Always Sunny theme? Like, that would make sense. That's a
sure.
show about Philadelphia. Or the Rocky theme. That makes sense.
But
Fresh
the
Prince of Bel-Air is literally about getting the hell out of Philadelphia.
No, like the irony of that the It's Always Sunny theme music is literally just public domain music. Because when It's Always Sunny started, they didn't have the budget to get like rights to these songs. So they literally use all these like little like music that was in public domain. And that's why you hear some of the Always Sunny the jingle and stuff and the music on random commercials. Because that's what it is. It's public domain. Like that's what that song is. Now it's come, you know, you associate it with Always Sunny now, but that's because they didn't have any money to pay for actual rights to songs. So,
yeah. So I just can't. I am like so annoyed by this whole like Bryce Harper. He's one of us now. Like this time 6 weeks ago. There were columnists all over Philadelphia talking about how greedy Bryce Harper was and how Phillies fans should boo him from now until eternity when he signed somewhere else and he was public enemy number one and blah, blah, blah. And now all of a sudden he's just like the greatest Philly since Jimmy Rollins. What?
By the way, you're going to be in trouble for this conversation, bud.
Oh, man, I know. I don't think she doesn't know how to listen to podcasts.
That's a good
point. We've discussed this a lot. She always makes me send her links to the show doesn't find. I said, there's a whole app on your phone called podcasts. And she's like, no, I only listen to podcasts through other apps that have them. What? How does that make sense?
That's it all.
But anyway, I just won't send a link to this one. so I Bryce Harper, and I'm worried that weekend series is going to bring out every person who has moved from the Philadelphia area to Denver, and it's going to be like when the Seven Line Army came a couple years ago, Mets fans, and it's just going to be this miserable, which, by the way, the Rockies obliterated the Phillies last year at Coors Field at the end of the season, and I don't recall really seeing that many Phillies fans there, but it's fascinating how, quote, stupid money, unquote, brings all these people out of the woodwork. What I'm saying is they are my annoying team of 2019. I'm already very annoyed by that team. And I think their inevitable fall and the hubris that they are showcasing right now will make that immensely sad.
And really, like, besides, like, you know, Bryce, whatever you think of him or not, and like Jake Arrieta, like the team is pretty likable. Like, you got McCutcheon.
McCutcheon's
the
best.
Reese Hoskins is
I
really
love
good.
Andrew McCutcheon.
Like, yeah, like Jane Segura's a really good player. Like,
yeah, there's a lot of guys. Zach Eflin, I remember when he was coming up, was like the friendliest dude in the minor leagues.
Like, Aaron Nola's really freaking good. Like, I know not this year so far, but, you know.
There's some really likable, interesting guys on that roster.
Yeah.
But, man, they have turned themselves into a tremendously dislikable team. So yeah, we'll all get to deal with that coming up next week. I just had to get that out there. I had that, the bow and the fist pump thing. When I see that, it like sends me into a blind rage. It's just the dorkiest. He's like a corporately manufactured star. Like he and to be fair, he kind of is. Like Bryce Harper was never just another guy. Like he never got to just be, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated at 16.
Right.
He never just got to be like a kid. He never got to be a guy coming up in the minor leagues. Like he was always he was like Tiger Woods. Like he never got to just live a normal life. And I'm sure Bryce Harper has no regrets about that, and he's got $300 million to show for it.
You know, he's LeBron without
right
postseason series win.
Right. But it's just like I just see that, and I don't know, maybe I'm going to be wrong, but I just see that as a train on a one track destination toward a spectacular crash. Like I don't see, and maybe down the road it works out. Maybe in a couple of years it works out. But first of all, Bryce Harper was just voted by his peers as the most overrated player in baseball. Just got one of the biggest contracts in the history of American professional sports. And really, like, when you put his numbers up against other guys around baseball, is he worth it? I guess we'll find out.
Oh,
but I just don't see if you would have gone out and thrown that money at Mike Trout, who is a transcendent, generational, all-time talent. Yeah. Bryce Harper, when his career ends, is he going to be a Hall of Famer? Maybe. But, like, is Bryce Harper right now the clear-cut second-best outfielder in baseball? I don't know if he is.
Look, he's the 15th highest-paid player in baseball right now. That is what it ends up
being. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And that's based on the annual average value,
right,
correct?
Right, right.
And the way he separated that all out is evidently what turned him away from signing with the Giants or the Dodgers, because the money that he would have had to pay in taxes in California over the span of the contract would have robbed him of like $30 million.
That is correct. Like that. Yeah, even like the 4-for-150 or whatever the Dodgers ended up offering. Yeah,
yeah.
He would have lost like a good amount. It's 13% income tax out here, guys. It sucks.
Which, like, you know, when you're making $300 million, wouldn't you kind of still rather go to a place where, like, and I'm not trying to like dump on, I like the city of Philadelphia. I think it's great. I'm a history nerd. I love going out there. I love the food. I like, you know, visiting all the random historical sites that are around the Philly area. But like, if you had that, or like, I'll go to, well, maybe not San Francisco, because that team has nothing in the system. They've got a very weird future.
Yeah, no.
But like,
yeah,
you're going to go to Dodger Stadium, like go live in Southern California, be a superstar in the second biggest media market in the country, and play for a team that's been in the last two World Series. Like, I don't know. I might take a pay cut for that.
I mean, like, you know, $150 million after taxes in California is only $130 million. I mean, like,
well,
we saw
man
on Instagram, he's got a baby coming in August. He's got a family to feed, man. $130
well,
million
true
does not go as far
with
as it used
Charles
to.
Sprewell, you could, in Southern California, $130 million, you could get, like, a three-bedroom house.
Maybe.
So, I don't know. We've spent way too much time on Bryce Harper, but I just could. The fist pump, man, it just drives me insane.
The Bryce bow. Yeah.
So annoying. Oh, it's so annoying. So they come to town next week. That's gonna be exciting. 2 weeks from now. Where were we headed next?
I think we were talking about Germán Márquez. No,
yeah, that's right.
Well, no, we can talk about, like, it's great that Germán Márquez is here. Good. Glad he's here. Sign Freeland next. Anyway, you mentioned that you specifically got in trouble by Jesse Spector yesterday for what he thought was us making
me
fun
specifically.
Of
specifically what me get the hell out
of
here,
of Tulo going back on the IL,
right.
Which again, none of us are shocked that it took 4 days for him to go back on the IL. But I think he thought that we were making fun of Tulo being hurt, which is not the case. We were making fun of those horrible Yankees fans who saw Tulo hit like a wall scraper home run to right field last week and proclaimed Troy Tulowitzki healthy and ready to go 30-100 this year.
Yeah.
Because Yankees fans are idiots.
Well, and the whole narrative around Troy Tulowitzki, which has always been the case, and it was this offseason, it was Dan O'Dowd, oh, New York was always the place where he asked me to trade him. Like all that garbage, and he wore number 2 for Derek Jeter, and he was always such a Yankees fan or whatever. First of all, Tulo's from Southern California, so he was just one of those 90s kids who jumped on the Yankees bandwagon. Second of all, that is the annoying thing. The anointing of Troy Tulowitzki as this, like, prodigal Derek Jeter clone who has finally come to the place where he was meant to be all along, blah, blah, blah. That's what I think got under everybody's skin. We're not gloating about somebody's injury. And I tried to explain that to Jesse, trying to cover for your bad tweets. Tried to explain to Jesse yesterday, like, it's not gloating about an injury. It's gloating about this fake narrative that was constructed around Tulo that turned into all of this arrogance about, like, oh, he's back and he's healthy. And look at what Troy Tulowitzki's going to do here this year, blah, blah, blah. And I said it was Yankees fans, and Jesse said, well, I think it was the media, but whatever. And I said, all right, media then. Like, it's we're not gloating about Troy Tulowitzki being hurt. I think it's just like when you have seen this movie so many times before, for all of the outsiders to think like, oh, man, well, this dude finally – and Troy Tulowitzki did not make a lot of friends around here. Troy Tulowitzki was not the most liked athlete around here and made it pretty well known that he was not a huge fan of the organization. And in Tulo's defense, the organization was extraordinarily poorly run under Dan O'Dowd.
Yes.
So I don't think that it's necessarily the worst thing in the world that Troy Tulowitzki made it known that he was not happy with how things were run around here as he was here. But was not a guy who was engaging with fans, was not a relatable athlete, was not good with the media. Troy Tulowitzki was not a likable guy while he was here. So I don't think that it's not gloating that he's injured, but there is also a sense of Rockies fans saying like, yeah, this is what we've been trying to tell people forever.
Yeah.
And it happens, and it's the least surprising thing to people here.
Yeah, well, we're not like happy that he's on the IL. Like, you know,
it sucks.
At some point, want Tulo to do well. Whatever. Like, you know,
he had the ability to be the best short, and for a while was the best shortstop in baseball. He could have had a potentially Hall of Fame career if he could have stayed healthy, but he's never been able to stay healthy, and that sucks. Athletes who go through that sucks. I mean, that's Ken Griffey Jr. would have been the greatest player in the history of the sport if he would have been able to stay healthy, but
he's still on the short list, but yes,
and
he's still
he's still a top 10 player in the history of baseball. And Tulo, I'm not saying he would have been one of the greatest players in the history of baseball, but I think Tulo could have been the Rockies' first Hall of Famer if he stays healthy, probably if he stays here for his entire career, because then he's a 500 home run guy, something like that.
Now, if he goes to the Hall of Fame, he'll go in as a Yankee now.
undoubtedly, because that's where he wanted to be his whole life. But it's just like when you've been telling people for so long the sky is blue and they've been telling you no, it's green, and then all of a sudden they realize that it's blue, then it's like, yeah, that's what we've been saying this entire time. So it's not gloating about an injury. And I feel bad if it came off like we're gloating about an injury. We're just gloating about a narrative that has been proven to be the reality that everybody here has known for a long time. And when that reality gets pushed onto New York and to Yankees media and fans, yeah, it's a little bit more, I don't want to say gratifying, but it's a little bit more validating when all of a sudden that segment has to see, oh, okay, yeah, maybe the entire track record of his career has been that way for a reason.
And on that same bent, it makes me furious when all of a sudden, like, everybody around baseball, especially through the Yankees, because of the Yankees, are like, hey, yo, this Adam Ottavino guy, he's pretty good. Who knew?
Hey,
this DJ LeMahieu guy, he's pretty good. Who knew? Like,
this Mike Tauchman guy.
Like, yeah.
Pretty good. Who knew?
But yes.
Yeah.
Like,
that's.
It's like, hey, these guys are actually pretty decent, you know? Like,
no way.
No kidding.
It's just, I think that.
Oh, that makes me so mad. I hate
that. Yeah. Is that on. And our top five list of people that we love most on Twitter who has been adopted by Rockies Twitter is Jesse Spector.
Yep.
And we don't want Jesse to be mad at us.
Oh, you. Because we love you him. Specifically.
It was you! The hell out of here. What else are we talking about today?
I don't know.
It is minor league opening day today.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Opening night. Sorry, the nomenclature has been changed. It is no longer opening day. It is now opening night, which really makes sense in the minor leagues because there's like two teams that play day games on opening day in the minor. So it is now opening night. But the Rockies have some really interesting rosters across the organization. And some of the guys who are around closest to the major league level have arrived in Albuquerque. They will get started tonight. Brendan Rodgers is on that roster for the Albuquerque Isotopes, the Rockies' top prospect. The shortstop, he will get work there, obviously, but in other places as well with Albuquerque. Peter Lambert is on that roster also. Double A with the Hartford Yard Goats. Colton Welker is on that roster. Tyler Nevin is on that roster. Two power hitting dudes who are going to be really interesting to watch as the season goes along, being at the Double A level for the first time. The Lancaster Jethawks are a team that I don't want to say they're devoid of elite prospect talent. They don't have quite as much, I think, as some of the other spots in the system. But the Jethawks do have some interesting guys. Casey Golden last year contended for a minor league home run title. He'll be on that roster, an outfielder in the organization. Ryan Vallade, who's one of the top infield prospects in the system, he'll be on that roster. They have some interesting pitching prospects. Will Gaddis, Robert Tyler will be on that team.
I've got to get out there more this year because, yeah, I mean, they're the closest team to where I live now, especially in the Valley. It's about an hour, hour north. Because I'm in the Valley now, so it's a little bit quicker to get there. But
living in
Reseda. And also Jason Schwartz, our good pal, still doing Jethawks games, I believe, this year. So another reason to get up there.
And they, for Copa de la Diversión, the Fun Cup, they will be the Wind. That is their, that's their Copa name this year.
Ever been to Lancaster, you know there's a lot of wind.
And what's kind of funny is the Viento, by the way, is the Viento de Lancaster is the Copa name. El Viento.
Well, it's like the Mets prospect, Mark Vientos.
Ah, connections.
Mark wins.
But what's really funny, I was talking with a Rockies front office member when I was at camp last week, and he was like, it was the day after the Copa things came out, and he was like, I had to give everybody in Lancaster shit because all they do is complain about the wind. And then they announce this Copa identity and that's their identity. Like they just ran with it. So yeah, it's actually a very good point. Like, so that team is interesting.
Now, the one time I went to Lancaster, it was a couple years ago, and there was a huge fire that had gone up that day near Lancaster.
I remember that.
That I had to drive through. I actually met Bobby DeMuro there who, who knows where Bobby DeMuro is now, but I met Bobby DeMuro there. We were at the game, and I had to drive through it, nearly like saw the flames cross the road almost, got through it, got to Lancaster. They were still playing the game, but the whole time I was sitting out there at Lancaster, I was getting like, it was like snowing. It was just ash falling on the field and on people, and it was very, very weird.
Yeah, that was scary. I remember that. They canceled a bunch of games.
Because like it was that day that it started, and then it ended up getting closer and closer to Lancaster throughout that day. But it was the Sand Creek Fire, something like that. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that was not a good. Yeah.
One time I've been there, so let's go back and make that better. It was also 110 degrees. So
make better memories.
Yeah.
The most interesting roster in the Rocky system to me is at Class A Asheville, where a friend of the show, Doug Maurer, is the radio guy. And also, I want to say, maybe the smartest dude that we know in that Doug is not on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I am so envious of Doug for that. But Doug is a genius. And Doug's a great play-by-play guy. If you get a chance, if you're a MILB TV or a Game Day Audio subscriber, you can listen to Doug tonight as the Tourists open their 2019 season. Again, we are recording this on opening night of the minor leagues on Thursday, April the 4th. The Tourists will open at home against the Augusta Green Jackets, the Class A affiliate of the San Francisco Giants. But on that roster, the most fascinating thing is the starting rotation.
Yeah.
They have three former first-round picks on that roster, two of whom really need good seasons. Riley Pint, right now, is the eighth-ranked prospect in the organization via MLB Pipeline, fourth overall selection in 2016. Last year made just four appearances, dealt with forearm stiffness, dealt with an oblique strain. I talked to him for a story that's up in MILB from last month. You can go find that. He seemed really relaxed and pretty confident and comfortable with where he is, which I think is great. But he's going back to a place that has been kind of a house of horrors for him. Riley Pint spent the entirety of the 2017 season at Asheville and did not have a whole lot of success there. He made, I think, 22 starts there, an ERA of 5.42. He went 2-11. He walked 59, again, 79 strikeouts over 93 innings. He needs a big step forward this year.
Yes.
A guy who I think is not on his last legs as a prospect, but needs a bigger step forward even more so than Riley Pint, is Mike Nikorak. Mike Nikorak was coming back from Tommy John surgery last year. He ended up making 9 appearances for Class A short season Boise, 4.32 ERA. He made 2 starts over that span, 8 1/3 innings in total. But What Mike Nikorak struggled with is what he struggled with at the start of his career. He walked 11 and struck out 10 over 8 and a third. And now, granted, coming back from Tommy John surgery, command is always difficult to rediscover. That's kind of the last thing that comes along. But those two guys really would benefit from a good season. And when you come up in the Rocky system, you don't get any friendly ballparks in that way. If you're a pitcher and you're looking for a ballpark to help you out, it's not going to be the case. Asheville is probably the best hitter's ballpark in low A. Lancaster is the best hitter's ballpark in the minor leagues. Hartford's a pretty good hitter's ballpark for the Eastern League. And then Albuquerque, obviously, is an offensively friendly ballpark and an offense-friendly league in the Pacific Coast League. So you're not going to get any help from anywhere. All that being said, and I talked to Riley about that, if you go to Asheville, Lancaster, all these places and have success, as he said, like, then nobody can really doubt you. If right. you go do it in all these places, then everybody has Which to say, is, all right, well, this guy can do it.
What we saw with John Gray and Kyle Freeland right. and Herman Marquez, all those guys went to these places and had success, and now they're in the big leagues having success, pitching in Coors Field especially. Like, if you get used to it, it's not an issue for you anymore when you get to right. the big leagues. Coors Field isn't a bear when you've been doing it at places with higher elevation, like in Albuquerque, or at a place like Asheville, which got a crazy short right field porch, or Lancaster, where the Viento blows out like 50 miles an hour every day to left. Like,
yeah. The Rockies, that is one of the best and most under-the-radar business decisions that the Rockies have made in recent years, is to make the entire system a super hitter friendly
yes.
system, because the pitchers are going to have to deal with that when they get to the major league level. So you jump right into pro ball in the Pioneer League at Grand Junction.
Yeah, right.
then you go to Boise, which is a pretty hitter friendly park in the Northwest League, which isn't quite as hitter friendly of a level or a league as the Northwest League, but still tilts toward the offense. Asheville's a bandbox. Lancaster has the wind. Hartford's a bandbox because it was built into a really, really small footprint. Albuquerque is, I think, a higher elevation than Denver.
It is, yeah. It's like over, it's over 6,000, yeah.
And it's in a league where everything is tilted toward offense. So it's that is one of the smartest player development decisions that they've made in a long time.
Yeah.
One of those, I think, was kind of forced on them in Lancaster, but the way the Rockies have embraced
honestly,
that
it works.
Since
it works for
in
them.
Lancaster,
yeah.
It's great. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
It totally works for them.
And like and I they said, got Ryan, my MLB podcast.
Then you got Ryan Rollison, nice, too. Yeah.
The Coors meme yeah. applies every level down. It's yeah. very nice. But, yes, they have Ryan Rollison, too, and that is the other name in that rotation who's fascinating. He was the Rockies' first-round pick last year. So you got a first-rounder from 2016, Riley Pine. First-rounder from 2015, and Mike Nikorak, who's coming back from Tommy John surgery a couple of years ago. And a first-rounder from last year in Ryan Rollison. And Ryan Rollison is kind of the bizarro version of those guys because he was a college pitcher, already very polished when he came out.
Problematic
jumped
tweets.
Into the Pioneer League, yeah. dominated 34 strikeouts against 8 walks in 29 innings last year. He only gave up 2 homers in 29 innings, which in the Pioneer League is pretty impressive. He had a whip of 0.79. So you put Ryan Rollison there, and you know he kind of reminds you a little bit, I think, of Kyle Freeland in that he's a college guy who should climb pretty quickly. We could see him in Denver by next year.
Yeah. Well, and all these guys, too. Nikorak is 22. Pine, yeah. we've been hearing about for years, even through Jeff Passan's book, The Arm. He's yeah. 21.
21.
Ryan Rollison's 21. Like, you know, we've been hearing about Nikorak and Pine
insane.
Forever, but, like, they're the same age.
The fact that Riley Pine and Ryan Rollison are the same age,
right?
That is nuts to me. Riley Pine is actually younger than Ryan Rollison, but only by 4 months. And Ryan Rollison was a collegiate pitcher, went to Ole Miss, like, was very good in the SEC. And you think, like, oh, man, he's so polished. He's going to make this big jump. He's the same age.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Well, the one guy I want to see in Asheville, you're probably to get to him here, but is Grant Levine.
Hell
first baseman
yeah.
at 19 years old, first round pick, a supplemental pick last year. He had huge pop out of New Hampshire. Not really sure what they're going to get with a guy like that, a cold weather guy like Levine. But my goodness, did he have a great season last year.
Yeah. Last year, 59 games with rookie level Grand Junction. He batted 350, 477, 519 for a 996 OPS. He did not, by the way, win the Pioneer League batting title.
At
and that went to
which, you know.
His Class A Asheville teammate this year, Coco Montes, who will be on that roster. Coco Montes last year was a Pioneer League MVP and had a fantastic season. He's a guy who kind of has come, I don't want to say out of nowhere.
15th rounder, yeah, I mean.
And actually, No, that's a lie. He didn't win the batting title. He just won the MVP. Now I can't remember who the batting title winner was last year. But either way, Coco Montes last year bats 333, 413, 513. He was a 15th round pick out of South Florida. And second base prospect who's kind of put himself on the map. He's not yet ranked as a prospect, but that's a guy who, if he goes this year and has a good season in Asheville, he cements himself as a very legitimate prospect in a place where the Rockies traditionally have struggled to develop prospects.
And Grant Levine's 19. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, I am really excited to see what Grant Levine does this year. And so there's some really, really cool talent on that roster at Asheville. The short season clubs, Boise in the Northwest League and Grand Junction in the Pioneer League, those will not get started until June. But the four full season teams get started tonight. And
keep an eye out.
Pretty cool. That is pretty cool. What else were we going to get to?
I think it was pretty good. I don't know.
It's basically it. It's just not a whole lot to talk about, really, in the first week of the season. Yeah. But don't be too freaked out about the offense. Yes, no. It's frustrating because it's a continuation of the symptoms that were so maddening toward the end of the season. But, you know, it's kind of the way it goes sometimes. And hopefully, as dudes start getting more comfortable and getting into the flow of a season, especially at the major league level, being everyday players for the first time, Ryan McMahon and Garrett Hampson, and when Raimel Tapia is in there, those guys are going to come along. Ryan McMahon's hit the ball hard so far this season. Garrett Hampson, his body of work has been too consistent and too good to think that he's going to have the same types of struggles that he did on this road trip. So they'll be fine. They'll be okay. As Josh Reddick would say, chill.
Chill, guys.
You know.
It's okay.
Coming up tonight, Hartford on the road at Richmond, 6:35 p.m. Eastern time. Augusta will be the visiting team at Asheville as the tourists host the Green Jackets, 7:05 Eastern time. 8:35 Eastern time, Albuquerque's at home to take on Salt Lake. Jeff Hoffman gets the opening day nod there. The Lancaster Jethawks will open behind Will Gattis at home against the former Rockies Class A affiliate, the Modesto Nuts, who will be starting a pitcher named LJ Newsome. And LJ's first name is spelled LJAY.
Okay.
From La Plata, Maryland.
Sure.
So now you know. But that'll do it. Rockies Dodgers this weekend. Be there.
Have fun, guys. Yeah. Have fun with it.
I'll be there tomorrow. So anybody who's going, I'll be there with my dad, and you can shoot us a tweet or something. We'll try to say hello. I will also, for anybody who listens to this like immediately when it gets posted, this afternoon, the afternoon of April 4th, I will be on 104.3 The Fan.
Oh, I hope they don't see your problematic tweets. Yeah.
Talking Rock, which is, you know, like I'm already on that station broadcasting live sporting events sometimes, so it's kind of funny. I'll give credit where it's due. Ross Sharon, the new program director at The Fan, called me. We used to work together a few years ago to a radio station, and he called me and said, you know, we're really trying to enhance our Rockies coverage for this year. And my response was like, enhance it from zero. And he said, no, what's frustrating to me is I went back and looked at like all of our programming notes over the last year. Raj claims that they spent 20% of last year talking about Major League Baseball. And my reply to that was, yeah, but you've only marketed yourself as a Bronco station, as an NFL talk station. Like, I don't begrudge anybody for bailing on The Fan, because for the last 10, 15 years, that is the only thing that The Fan has marketed itself as. But that, I think, has started to irk people at The Fan, that they want to be known as a sports talk station, not just a Broncos talk station. Obviously, they want to be the number one Broncos station. Everybody does in town. That's a money market. But they want to enhance the Rockies conversation. So I'm going today for a round table that will include some interesting dudes, some of whom have blocked the PDP on Twitter. So
hooray.
Looking forward to seeing Patrick Saunders today. That'll be great, not awkward at all. But if you are in the Denver area or you want to listen online, 1 to 3 p.m. Mountain Time today, April 4th, I'll be on The Fan talking Rockies. And that's all.
Well, then.
Should be interesting.
Are you going to Dino Costa that thing and get fired on your first day?
I'm just going to curse and like yell about running over protesters with cars or whatever that dude does. What a monster. I guess that's,
have fun this weekend, guys. Enjoy baseball being back.
Yeah, enjoy baseball. Baseball's back. That's great. We'll talk to you next week. Love you.
Bye.